This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
All right, I love these Olympics, and I said it last night, was another great night. Team USA beat Canada, Tiki Barber, NBC Sports, Yahoo Sports via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. All right, we had Julia Mancuso on earlier, and she was laughing that watching the hockey game last night, she didn't want to cheer because Canadians were taking it personally. What is it like being in Canada, Tiki, and the Canadians are having a horrible Olympic run, and you as an American, what's it like?
You know what, Colin? That's all they care about in Canada is hockey. I did a story before the day that they were playing the Swiss. You know, it went to overtime. They went to shootout. Sidney Crosby with the wrist shot, and Martin Brodeur with the save that ultimately won that game. And I was going around to some of the bars doing this piece, and you know, asking people, why is hockey so big here? And the other question I was asking is, what's the number two sport in Canada? And literally no one had answers. The only thing they could come up with was drinking, maybe sex. These are the number two sports. It's all hockey. And so to see them, you know, struggle last night against the United States team, you know it's got to be, you know, crushing to them. This is like a Canadian football team coming down and beating one of the stars of the NFL in a lot of ways, because they were such high favorites with the Russians and the Czechs. And the United States was supposed to be someone who was going to struggle just to get into the medal round. And here they are sitting on top of Group A. It's pretty awesome, but it is. I agree with Julia. You can't cheer because they might jump you.
You know, Tiki, how are we, you know, we're the ugly Americans and we're the big brother and we tend to lead with our chin. When the United States is doing well at a Canadian hosted Olympics, are they cheering for us? Is there animosity? You've been at the Alpine event skiing.
Yeah.
What's it like?
No, you know what? I think it's kind of superseded because the Olympics provide something that I think a lot of other sporting events don't necessarily have, which is this world stage of cooperation where the intensity of the moment and the events, you know, drive the fans nuts and crazy, and it's awesome to experience. But at the end of the day, the players and the competitors and the athletes, they feel the amateurness of it. And while they do strive for the gold, I think they're genuinely happy for the guys who become successful, even if it is at their own expense.
Scott Lago went home. He was a snowboarder, and they're all a little bit goofy to begin with.
Yeah, tell a little about this story.
Yeah. My thing is,
I thought it was ridiculous that they sent him home.
It's
a 22-year-old kid he is. He's out. He's probably had, you know, five or six drinks in him. He's wearing his medal around. This is like the most, you know, celebrated time in this kid's life. And somebody does something stupid, and someone snaps out a camera phone and takes a picture of him. All of a sudden, it's like he's the pariah on this Olympic Games. And I think the reaction was far too overstated, and it didn't fit the quote-unquote crime.
You know what's interesting, Tiki, is, and you're a thoughtful guy about this, there was a sense it was sexually suggestive, obviously.
Yeah,
has anybody seen the figure skating? Has anybody...
Yeah.
I mean, good God, that is all, that's a sex sell.
I agree. I mean, look at the outfits. I mean, that's what it's all about for a lot of things, in sports. I mean, look at the athletes, the outfits that we wear for football. I mean, a lot of women will say, oh, I just watch football because the guys have tight pants on. But for Christ's sakes, you see the beach volleyball in the summer
Olympics.
I mean, in the Team USA in the Summer Olympics were wearing white and it was raining. You know, I can't tell you what the ratings were for NBC simply because of the sexual nature of it. But at the end of the day, it's about the athletes. And I think this kid got a raw deal because of youthful exuberance.
Yeah.
That exists for anybody in this country. I mean, there's probably people who have done much, 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 much worse that have gotten a free pass.
Okay, so we got into this argument a couple days ago, and everybody hates me for it, but I said, listen, is that it's nothing against Bodie Miller and all these downhillers, but I can't put a snowboarder in the class of Randy Moss. I can't, you know. And everybody's like, oh, you're a jerk. I mean, how?
You know why? It's a cult sport. Have you ever tried to snowboard?
Not yes, not way, not, didn't end well.
Yeah, exactly. So I did the same thing. I tried it when I was up in Vancouver because, you know, the first couple of days up on the mountain, the weather was horrible, so they couldn't get any events off. So I think for myself and a lot of people there, it was just a great opportunity to go do things, get on the mountain yourself. And so I put on a snowboard for the very first time, and I can't tell you how many times I face planted, Colin. You know, I'm an athlete. You know, I have balance, at least that's what they say. All you need is balance. I could not stay up on this thing, and once I started going, I couldn't stop. So to see some of the things that these guys do, especially a guy like Sean White, who is heads and heels above anybody else in the field, in that half pipe, that snowboard half pipe, it really makes you appreciate the athleticism that it takes. And so I think in his own way, he is like a Randy Moss. I mean, he's not, because the attention isn't there, the celebration isn't there year round. You know, he gets one stage. I mean, the X Games are one thing, but he really gets one stage in the Olympics, maybe two, to really showcase himself, where Randy Moss has an opportunity every week for you know, 4 months. So his notoriety is higher, but I don't think you can diminish the talent of a guy like Sean White, because most people in the world can't do what he does.
Yeah. Tiki Barber, NBC and Yahoo Sports via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Were you at the USA-Canada hockey game last night?
I was not at the game, but, you know, being around, it's the buzz is crazy for hockey in Canada, Colin. I mean, it's all they think about and all they worship is Canada. That's why the women dominate. They're going to dominate this Olympics. The Canadian women are going to dominate this Olympics because they play it from the time they're 3-year-old, just like every kid, every man, every boy in Canada plays. So for them to have lost to this young, you know, whippersnapperish American team that wasn't even supposed to make it into the next round, it's like a Canadian team going down and beating a pro football team in the United States.
Yeah. All right, Tiki. What are you doing today? What are you covering today?
Nothing today. It's a quiet day today, and I'm actually probably going to go home soon. You know, I got things to take care of back in New York, and the Olympics were great for a couple of weeks, but it wears on you after a while, being away for so long. Yeah. I was down at Super Bowl too, you know.
Good talking to you, bud.
Likewise, Colin. Be good.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
For all of those who wondered how long it would take Jimmy Johnson and company to bounce back from a dismal Daytona 500, well, how about 7 days? That's right, back in victory lane where he got his very first win 48 races ago to match the number on his car that was first at the finish line today for the Auto Club 500. Johnson and company got a couple of good breaks along the way, but had a very competitive race car, and he gets his first win of 2010.
Man, this racetrack's been so good to me over the years. To win my first race here in my rookie season and to come back and win my 48th race here, it's been an awesome track. Today, you know, at the early part of the race, we had best car, and then there at the end, I think the 29 was better, but we had track position and made the most of it.
Pat Patterson here from Fontana, California at the Auto Club Speedway of Southern California. Jimmy Johnson in victory lane. Kevin Harvick gave it a good go there towards the end. Looked like he might challenge Johnson for the win. It got tight in the corners. Harvick scraped the wall, but still pulled off a second-place finish.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. Everybody on our Shell Pennzoil Chevrolet did a great job, and you know, I got the speeding penalty there early and made that all back up. And you know, Jimmy saw me coming there and moved up and kind of took my line away. And I just, you know, there's no room for error when you're running high like that. And I got a little tight and got in the wall with the right front and just knocked the fender in. But great day for RCR. All the cars were fast. And keep running like that, we'll win our share.
A lot of bow ties up front. A lot of Chevys were racing hard there towards the end. In fact, they got the first four spots. That old guy, Mark Martin, right there in the mix again. A good run for the GoDaddy.com Chevrolet.
It was really fun. Sometimes we were the heat, and sometimes we were dropping back, but it was fun. Sometimes, you know, just a lot of weather change in, out. My car was really good, sun out, and that last run, we just we didn't make a big enough adjustment, and there we were. So, yeah, really great run. I love driving this car.
Mark mentioned the weather. It was a kind of a weird day out here, very cool temperatures and rain all around the racetrack. It had to be cautioned a couple of times as the drops did fall, and there was some anticipation that it might not finish and go the complete 250 lap distance. It made it, and for Jimmy Johnson, getting caught on the pit road when one of the caution flags came out. He was in the right place at the right time. It basically gave him a free shot to be up front.
Yeah, I can't get around the fact we were flat out lucky being on pit road when the caution came out. You know, we had to take advantage of things at that point and step up and win the race, and fortunately we did. But when we were on pit road and heard the caution was out, I went through the procedure in my head. I'm like, okay, I passed the line, so I'm in really good shape, and it worked out.
Pat Patterson here on your Sunday night, our post race day report coming to you from California. Let's take a look at how they finished. Jimmy Johnson picks up the victory. Kez 48th, by the way, of his career. Kevin Harvick second. Today, Jeff Burton, his teammate, finished third. Great run for the RCR cars. Mark Martin finished up fourth, and Joey Logano got the first Toyota in the top five. Kurt Busch was sixth today. Matt Kenseth finished seventh. Clint Bowyer was eighth today. Tony Stewart finished up ninth, and tenth went to Greg Biffle. Kyle Busch was a winner on Saturday in the Stater Brothers 300. Danica Patrick had a very, very tough weekend here on the 2 mile Super Speedway, and she finished up way back in the back, but did manage to learn some things, even though she posted 31st. Race day will be ready to go from Vegas at 6 a.m. Eastern Time next Saturday and Sunday. Make your plans to join us. We'll have a preview of the weekend coming up on Thursday night. From Fontana, California, I'm Pat Patterson, ESPN Radio.
And right now, let's hop on the bus where we find our buddy Tim Kirkchin on the Grapefruit Express as he and the Baseball Tonight guys are traveling all around the state of Florida. This morning, they are in Jupiter watching the Florida Marlins. Good morning, Timmy.
How are you, boys?
Good.
Well, we are very well. Let's start right there with the Marlins. We previewed them early this morning, and I would put the question to you this way. The Phillies, it would appear, are the class of the National League East. When you look for the next team that could be a legitimate playoff contender, do you look to Florida, or is there another direction that you look?
I think the Braves and Florida are in the same spot. Keep in mind the Marlins, guys, just keep getting a little bit better every year, and they're a little more stable this spring because they've got Chris Coughlin for the whole year. They've got Dan Uggla instead of trading him, and most important, they got Josh Johnson, who's their ace, one of the best pitchers in the game, signed to a long-term deal, and they have a new ballpark coming in a couple of years. So this team is clearly on the way up. Do they have enough to beat the Phillies this year? I don't think so. Are they going to the playoffs? I don't think so. But are they in the discussion? Absolutely. And if people don't understand how good Hanley Ramirez is, they need to keep watching the game because his talent level is completely off the charts.
So I know it's spring training and pitchers and catchers this last week. It all hasn't been going on very long. But what other than Kruk eating on the bus has caught your eye so far this spring training?
Well, a couple of things. I saw Dice K. Matsuzaka the other day in Fort Myers, and trust me, fellas, he has a completely different body type than the guy who showed up for spring training last year. He was in terrible shape last year. He's in great shape now, probably the best shape of his life, and he's out to win a job in the rotation and make up for a very poor 2009. Also, I saw Justin Verlander with the Tigers the other day. He just signed an $80 million deal. And yet when they ran sprints, and Golic, you can appreciate this, they're running sprints with the pitchers in spring training on the second day, and that guy had to win all the sprints. It was amazing to me the competitive nature of him, and the whole team follows him because he's not only the best pitcher on the team, he's one of the best in the league. That really struck me that the Tigers are going to be in this thing because Justin Verlander is at the top and people are going to follow him in contention in this division.
Tigers,
and the third thing I saw was Steven Strasburg yesterday on his first day of spring training as a professional baseball player. And, of course, when he threw his bullpen for 8 minutes, the whole world just gathered around. They couldn't wait to see, you know, this pitching prodigy throw. And he's going to be great, fellas. His stuff is major league stuff, obviously, right now. And Davey Johnson, special assistant with the Nationals, told me, he told Jim Riggleman, the manager, don't get too good a look at this guy. You're going to love him so much, you're going to want to take him north with you for opening day. That is not going to happen. I'm pretty confident of that. But when that kid arrives, let's say June, he's not going back to the minor leagues.
Mike and Mike and Timmy Kirchin, sorry I jumped on you there. Interesting, certainly. Strasburg, I loved watching all of the radar guns that were out there yesterday. I want to go back to the Marlins, the beginning of the conversation. They're one of the teams that are sort of under the radar in the National League people should be watching for. Who else, as you start making your travels, are you really interested to watch from a National League perspective? Besides the big teams, we know about the Dodgers, we know the Rockies everyone loves right now, the Phillies have clearly been the best. Who else are you keeping a close eye on in this spring training that could be a sleeper in the National League?
Well, I think the Cubs are, again, an interesting team because it appears Carlos Zambrano has come to camp slimmer and ready to make up for last year and stay healthier and everything else. I think the Cubs are in a very important year for them. As we know, they've got $125 million tied up in 11 different players, some of whom seem to be going in the wrong direction, and it's going to be up to Lou Piniella to make sure he changes that direction and gets Zambrano on board and gets Alfonso Soriano, instead of going backwards, going forward again. I don't know if that can be done, but they are an interesting team. I just can't believe they're going to be non-contenders again this year. But they're going to have a few changes there for that to happen.
All right, Timmy, I'm going to have to ask you to hold on. I need to talk to you after the break, because after you talked about Verlander running sprints hard, I stopped listening to anything else you said.
You're such a...
I'm sorry,
Golic lives to make fun of baseball players, Timmy.
I'm sorry, Timmy.
Go ahead and pound him. Timmy, go ahead. Pound Golic for selling short the outstanding work that is done by baseball players during spring training.
All right. Golic, I'm going to tell you this seriously.
Okay.
Baseball players are the most well-rounded athletes out there. They're not the best athletes. NBA basketball players, 6'7" guys who run like the wind and use their hands and eyes and coordination, they are the best athletes. But I'm telling you, I believe this with all my heart, the most well-rounded athletes in professional sports are baseball players. More of those guys were great three-sport athletes in high school than any other sport. You put a baseball player on a football field or in an NBA game, and yes, they would be out of place, but not nearly as out of place as if you put a football player in the batter's box or put him at third base when Vlad Guerrero smokes one by his ear. That is completely out of place. I'm telling you, baseball players are way better athletes than anyone gives them credit for, because they are playing the hardest game in the world to play, and I will argue that point with anyone.
Really well done.
I love your enthusiasm.
He's 100% right. You know he's right. Oh, you sound... look, Timmy,
I thought Verlander was running the sprints hard so we can get to his tee time quicker.
No, you did. Timmy, trust me. You put him in his place. Well done, Tim Kirchin. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay, guys. See ya.
See ya.
He couldn't care less. Timmy goes on. He's 100%. By the way, he's 100%.
Listen,
right.
What have I said, and you disagree with me on this, what have I said is the hardest thing to do in sports?
Is to hit the baseball.
Is to hit a baseball. To me, it's the hardest thing to do in sports. I don't know. Listen, there are wonderful athletes in baseball. I don't know if I would go that far to say of all the sports, they're the most well-rounded athletes. But they're excellent athletes. I do give them a hard time because, listen, just watch the spring training B-roll every now and then, okay?
Yeah, they don't work
as hard. The toughest thing they do is they jog and they kick their foot up occasionally to stretch the hammy out, and we know they all go to tee time. So that's the fun I'm having. I appreciate their craft. I do. And as I said, I think hitting a baseball is the hardest thing there is to do.
Look, there's one thing that Timmy obviously got wrong. He said the baseball player is the most well-rounded. I've covered a lot of baseball. I've never seen a baseball player as round as you.
He is a Hall of Famer, four-time NBA Executive of the Year. He is also the director of USA Basketball, a friend of the show, Jerry Colangelo, via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. All right, first thing I got to get out of the way is this. You know Coach K from Duke. You hired him to coach Team USA in the Olympics, Jerry. There have been rumors about New Jersey, which he has denied. Would Coach K, in your opinion, Jerry, ever go to the NBA ever in his life?
I don't think so at this stage. There was a time just a few years ago, you're familiar with it, when he was being wooed by the Lakers. And there was some bit of a tug at that time, but I think now that he's at the stage he's at, I don't think so, Colin. I think he's at Duke for the duration.
When you look at the NBA right now, Jerry, as a former owner of the Phoenix Suns, your son is an executive. They're getting to a precipice here of a labor stoppage, perhaps in the next couple of years. Half the teams are losing money. Players make about 57% or more of the revenue. As a former owner, is a strike or a boycott unavoidable? What do you see happening in the next couple of years?
Well, I think it is a critical time. It's probably a time to right the ship. You know, it's been going in one direction for a long time, and you know, we've been pretty good in terms of lack of work stoppage because the players have been well treated, well taken care of, and we're now at a time because of economic times that the landscape has changed, and I think more reality has to set in, and therefore, unless people are reasonable about making a deal that's good for both parties, we could end up with a stoppage.
I mean, let's be honest about this. It is, if the players make 57%, and I know most of our audience listening thinks this is boring revenue talk, but if players make 57%, what is a reasonable number that players should make of NBA revenues?
Well, I think this. I think rather than using a percentage necessarily, you need to look at the books of all the teams in the league. And, you know, here's where we get into the big market, small market, medium market issue. Revenue sharing is a big piece of this. If revenue sharing was equal across the board, and the one sport that's done the best job of revenue sharing is the NFL. You know that. And their television money is so enormous that you're guaranteed to make a profit. With rare exception. That's not true in the NBA. So revenue sharing needs to be a big part of this, and only then can you really determine what the percentage would be.
Okay. There are also rumors about you going to the New Jersey Nets in a managerial operational role. Can you deny or confirm that? What's the latest on that?
I can confirm that it was a big issue when I was in Dallas at the All-Star game a week and a half ago because it was kind of news, but it was news to me. I don't know the people. That's total speculation, and so I wouldn't put much to it.
Okay. What do you make of the, LeBron James, Cleveland? Obviously, it's not the sexiest market, but there's a lot of good things about Ohio and the Cavs and what they've done for LeBron. Is it better for the league if he goes to New York, Jerry? Is that necessarily better if he goes to a major market?
No, not anymore. You know, there was a time when you heard that argument about the major markets need to have the glitter and that carries the league. I don't think that's true. I don't believe it's true in the NBA. And Dan Gilbert has done a great job, the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, of trying to put together a winning team and do whatever it's necessary to surround LeBron, to encourage him to stay. And there's no guarantees leaving. Now, having said that, I want to give Donnie Walsh a heck of a, I guess he's done a great job is what I'm trying to say here in clearing the cap space to put himself in a position to get a couple of free agents, not just one. And so it's possible that New York can make a major move here during the offseason.
Jerry Colangelo, a Hall of Famer, a four-time NBA Exec of the Year, Director USA Basketball. You're obviously involved in the Summer Olympics with Team USA Basketball. There's talk about when athletes go to the Olympics. There was an instance this weekend where a snowboarder got in a little bit of trouble because of an internet picture. Did you guys set the ground rules for Olympic athletes? Did you say, stay out of the limelight? What can you do when you're dealing with millionaires? How did you find the whole Olympic experience as a NBA exec going to the Olympics?
Well, first of all, the players, as you and I have discussed in the past, bought into a vision of what needed to take place and how we had to change the culture. We had good people. I think they understood what we needed to do. No one was going to embarrass one another. We just asked them to be who they are. And we didn't set any real specific rules that they had to abide by. But there was an understanding among all of us that we were looking out for each other. So I think our guys did a fantastic job, but it all goes to the character of the people we had.
You've always been a businessman first. What are you doing with merchantsinfo.com, Jerry?
Well, you know, one of the things I've said to you in the past is that one way you avoid problems in selecting athletes is through the selection process. You minimize your downside risk by taking good people. When you see red flags, you pass. In the business world, if you can go with some of this testing, the Merchants Pre-Employment Integrity Test, which basically screens individuals before they're even hired, you save yourself a lot of aggravation, a lot of money. You know, it's a big business today in terms of losses. When you look at what's happening in workman's comp payouts, by way of example, it's a big issue. So the bottom line is, in sports, in business, minimize your downside risk, take good people, avoid the red flags, and you're much better off for it.
Merchantsinfo.com. Good talking to you, Jerry.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Jerry Colangelo.
ESPN.com senior NFL writer John Clayton. John, is Randy Moss just talking here and being honest, or is he angling for some kind of deal either from New England or somewhere else?
Well, I think he's angling for a deal because I think he clearly likes to stay with Tom Brady, but I think what he realizes is what the Patriots have gone through the last several years. And you think about the fact that guys like Asante Samuel, Richard Seymour got into the last years of their contracts. They didn't come back. Vince Wilfork, of course, has to be franchised now just to stay with the team. I think what he's saying is very honest. I think that, much like the Eagles, the Patriots evaluate their players in their 30s very harshly, and I think what he's saying is not a bitter thing. I mean, he's not saying it's a bad thing. He's just talking about a reality, and I think what he realizes the reality is that, yeah, Tom Brady's going to get a contract, but probably Randy Moss is not. Now, maybe Randy put himself in that position by not having his best performance in 2009, but I think what he's expressing is not a bitter thing, but I think the business side of being the Patriots, which really isn't unlike a lot of teams. It's not unlike the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's not unlike, top teams that have to kind of watch their dollars. But I think that what he's saying is honest, and I think it's a little refreshing for him to be as honest as he is.
And it's kind of funny, John. It just seems to be this year that we're seeing Patriots players be outspoken and talk about the Bill Belichick regime. Moss, Adelius Thomas, not agreeing with how the team was being run. We never got that up through the last few years. Is this just the fact that a lot of those leaders are gone now that's going to keep the players in line? Or is this, hey, maybe we're getting a little tired of Bill Belichick's approach and how he runs things?
Well, see, I don't know how much it's Bill Belichick. I mean, maybe it's just the organization itself, but I think to be honest, I'm a little surprised we haven't heard of this a little bit earlier because, when you see such good players leave, now normally, you figure a Bill Belichick team is never going to let a good player go. I mean, they're going to let them go to the end. And you look at a lot of the players that leave some of the top teams, they may be big names, but they usually don't do well in other places. But you see Asante Samuel go someplace else, and all of a sudden he's an instant Pro Bowl star for the Philadelphia Eagles, then you've got to be a little bit concerned. I mean, you see Richard Seymour, even though he was on a bad Raider team, he did some good things to a point where he was a Pro Bowl alternate. So normally, good teams don't let good players go. So I think a lot of it has to go to the organization, and obviously they work within the business structure that works for that team. But I'm a little surprised it didn't start to come out a couple years ago because, other guys like Hobbs, when he went to Philadelphia, did express it. Now I think you're going to see more because a lot of times if you're a good player on a three-time Super Bowl champ, you're figuring you're going to get re-signed, and a guy like Adelius Thomas is not going to come in for more than what you're making. But that's what they've done. And so, to be honest, I'm a little surprised it's come to this point where it's been this long where we haven't heard these kind of complaints.
All right, John, let's stay in the NFL and head to golf here a little bit. You and I have talked about Terrell Owens, another wide receiver that's going to find a new home most likely this offseason. Leader in the clubhouse right now to sign Terrell Owens, is it still the Cincinnati Bengals?
I'd say so, yeah, because I think they're the team that almost makes the most sense because they're willing to take chances as long as there's a discount in the price. I think that in the case of Owens now being 37 and probably the reality starting to settle in that he may probably not be a 1,000-yard receiver. It is a good fit. I think they'll pay him decent money as long as, you know, he comes in and Laverneus Coles goes out, because I think it's going to be a swap. But I do think it makes a nice fit, because as Chad Ochocinco is thinking, if you bring T.O. in, he'll open up some things for Ochocinco. They also have to add a pass-catching tight end, and there's going to be an escalation of what they need to do on offense, because, you know, really, the loss of T.J. Hushmanzada hurt them more than they want to at least admit, and also certainly the loss of Chris Henry really hurt them. If you look at their stats, after Week 8, when Chris Henry went on the injured list, they go from an offense that was scoring about 22 points a game to an offense that was scoring 15 points a game. They had no speed, and even though Owens doesn't add a lot of speed, he's still a threat. He still gets separation, and I do think that the Bengals have a willingness to take chances on players who might be a little bit of a headache, but I think, to me, the Bengals are clearly the clubhouse leader on T.O.
ESPN.com senior NFL writer John Clayton is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. Now, John, let's get to the possibly what we could see the first trade coming through this offseason. The San Diego Chargers have been dangling defensive back Antonio Cromartie, who has been a playmaker for the majority of his career in San Diego. They have a glut of young DBs. They want to make a move. They want a running back in return for Cromartie. And what we've heard the last couple of days, potentially the Tennessee Titans might be some trade partner for them, Lendale White for Antonio Cromartie. What do you think is going
to
happen here?
Yeah, but also for that to happen, Lendell's going to have to sign some kind of a contract that makes sense. And, of course, you know, he's a restricted free agent right now, and that could be one fit. But clearly what's happening is that they're dangling Cromartie around, trying to see what running back's going to work. I mean, there was not going to be a way that Glenn Coffey was going to be an option. They're not going to go for an older running back. They obviously want a young running back to kind of come in there and work on first and second downs. But what I get from the Chargers is that they're a little bit skeptical right now whether the right deal can be there that makes sense, because obviously if you're giving up a starting cornerback with Pro Bowl potential, you know, you want a certainty at the running back position, and the uncertainty of getting somebody who's unsigned right now is going to be a problem. But there's no question that he's available, and there's no question he has value. I mean, even this year, he was a Pro Bowl alternate, even though he certainly, you know, made some mistakes on the field, gave up a few too many big plays, and got a few too many penalties. But, you know, that makes a lot of sense, because I think the Chargers' main need in the first round of the draft is getting a nose tackle. And if there's a way that they can dangle Cromartie and get a running back, that to me makes a lot of sense, because clearly LT is not going to be back there. And if they keep Darren Sproles, then he's only going to be that back. It's going to be a third down back. I mean, they need somebody like a Lendale White to be that back that can get them through first and second down.
Who are, in your estimation, people you've talked to, who are the hottest teams after Vic right now?
Well, I get the feeling that Buffalo may be a little bit gun-shy on it right now, and that's maybe a little surprising, but I think that they get the reality that maybe there's an outside chance that they can get Jimmy Clausen at number 9, and if not, they may just stay with Trent Edwards. But here's where I think there's some validity to the interest in Michael Vick, but I would take the number down below 50%, and here's why. I believe that there is interest in trading down from 1 to 3 with Tampa Bay, and if that's the case, they could get Josh Johnson, who is a more of an accurate passer in the same type of setting as Michael Vick. I think there's a reality right now that they need two quarterbacks in St. Louis, because I really doubt if Mark Bulger is going to be back there this year. And so if that's the case, and Kyle Bowler being a free agent that they have no desire to re-sign, I think the possibility is you trade down from 1 to 3, you maybe getting a second or third round choice in Josh Johnson. And the idea on Josh Johnson is he's a running type of quarterback who can be more accurate and taller as a thrower than Michael Vick. So what I think this does, if indeed true, and I think there have been initial conversations, I think it verifies that there is interest in Michael Vick, but I think the interest in Josh Johnson could take that from 60% to 40% of Vick ending up in St. Louis.
What's going to wind up happening as far as the Philadelphia Eagles? Are they going to wind up getting a deal for him, or are they going to have to cut him?
I think they're going to have to cut him. I mean, unless they're willing to pay him the signing bonus with the idea that they can trade him, but I don't see anybody being willing to accept him in a trade. I think that more than anything else, that most teams around the league realize he's not an accurate quarterback at this stage. If they want him to compete, it's going to be more on their terms, and the terms would be, you know, not giving up draft choice compensation and getting that contract. I think that they would like to sign him and bring him in. So I think he's going to get options, but I think those options are going to come after he's cut by the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, now speaking of the Eagles, they have plenty of work to do at quarterback. It'll be very interesting this offseason. The Donovan McNabb trade rumors continue to swirl around the team. I know you've talked that you think this is going to be McNabb's the time that he gets dealt. Who do you think are the leading couple of teams that are going to be in the hunt for McNabb services?
I don't know if there's a couple teams. I think it's only one team, and I think that's going to be the Minnesota Vikings, and it's so dependent on Brett Favre. And you know, will we know by April what Brett Favre is going to want to do? Probably not. I think today he stays retired, and then at some point as you get to the summer when things get real hot, that's when he wants to go. But if you're going to be the Minnesota Vikings, you can't wait till the summer. You've got to make sure you have certainty at quarterback. So I think it's Minnesota or Donovan McNabb stays in Philadelphia because I don't see another team stepping up. Arizona's not going to step up. I don't see Carolina stepping up. You know, I don't see anything happening with a team like Cleveland. We already know that Denver said no. So if that leaves only one team, it's Minnesota and Minnesota alone for probably a second-round pick. And if you offer anything less, you better keep Donovan McNabb. I think it's foolish right now for the Eagles to give up McNabb, even though I think there's a belief that Kevin Cobb can be a great quarterback, because I still look at the fact that they want to win football games this year. We saw with Aaron Rodgers with the Brett Favre trade. If you trade Brett Favre that first year, no matter how good that young quarterback is, he's not going to win the close games. I think they take a dip with Kevin Cobb, and I think they want to win. So if it's a second, you consider it for Minnesota. If not, you keep McNabb.
And now, why such a small market for McNabb? You'd think a lot of teams would be happier with him as a bridge quarterback than going out and getting a guy like Michael Vick. Hey, here's a guy that still has at least a couple of good years left, and maybe we can achieve a little bit more with him.
Well, because I think you bring up the key point. Not anybody wants to build a bridge. They want the young quarterback. They want somebody that's going to be there not just one year. Minnesota is a different story because they're looking at an older roster with guys that you know, may not be there 2-3 years from now, and they want to win now. If you're most other teams, you want to deal for a quarterback that's going to be there many, many years from now. And it's not that McNabb is at the end of his career. He's clearly not. But I don't see too many teams stepping up and saying, okay, I want this 33, 34-year-old quarterback. And so in the end, I think that the bridge idea only fits for one team. You know, Carolina, their bridge is Jake Delhomme until they get that next quarterback because of the contract they gave him. In Buffalo, I mean, bridge is not what they want. They want somebody young. So I think that the bridge concept only works for the Minnesota Vikings.
ESPN.com senior NFL writer John Clayton is our guest. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. So if what I'm reading on ESPN.com is true, John, and in some of the rumors surrounding free agent quarterback Chad Pennington may have more offseason suitors than Donovan McNabb?
I think so, yeah, because, I mean, the difference is, you know, you're giving up a high draft choice to be able to get a Donovan McNabb. You're only giving phone calls and a plane trip to get a Chad Pennington. That's why, you know, for example, I think that Chad Pennington would be a great fit in Arizona because now you get an experienced quarterback who can come in and challenge Matt Leinart. But if you're the Arizona Cardinals, you don't want to give a second-round pick or a first-round pick to give up to get Donovan McNabb. So I think in a lot of ways that free agent thing, because I think you saw it with Brett Favre. I mean, you know and I know, and I know this deals with your Jets, that if you put Favre on the Jets, as he was in 2008, they go to 9-3 when he's healthy, and or 8-3 when he's healthy, and have a pretty good team. You put Favre on the Minnesota Vikings, they're now a 12-win team. But the problem is, that's only a one-year fix. And so nobody wants to give up that draft choice compensation. In Pennington, I mean, you get a quarterback who can win and compete, but there's no draft choice compensation.
He's ESPN.com senior NFL writer John Clayton, his latest on the front of the NFL page on ESPN.com. John, appreciate your time with us as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.